Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 134. Are you ready for more with Jason Perlow? How you doing, Jason?
Woohoo! 134.
Yeah, that's excluding some of our specials. You know, I started handing it off to my team where we all started doing this a bit, but we're at 134. We've had, you know what, Perlow? This episode is probably going to put us over 200,000 listens, so I'm really stoked about that.
Wow. Do you also have, like, the old Christmas special with, you know, like, with the Wookiee family and B. Arthur in the bar?
We haven't done that one yet, but I do spend a lot of time in the bar. Yeah, I'm good at the bar. I'm an expert in those things. But no special eps yet in that sense. We do try to do special episodes at, like, events and the like. But I thought it'd be a good time to catch in with Jason. You know, it's a new year, 2017 coming to an end, 2018 starting. And I kind of would just kind of open-ended, you know, predictions of sorts and what's going to change and stuff. But before we get into that, it's been earlier in the year, I think I had you on, or maybe it was late last year, Jason. But what's been going on with you recently?
So I'm not at Microsoft anymore. I am at Dimension Data. And of course, I still have my column at ZDNet. You know, I'm back in the consulting delivery side of things. And, you know, it's been interesting to get back into that world. You know, before it was more working for the vendor, you know, really getting deep into Microsoft's technology, helping the service providers and various MSPs roll out new offerings and such, and adopting Microsoft technology, which was cool, right? But it still was a very Microsoft-centric focused kind of job, right? You're working for Microsoft, right?
Sure, absolutely.
And so going back to being a trusted advisor and working with all the different vendors has been great. I love it.
And when I saw your move, you either tweeted it, LinkedIn, I don't remember how I found out, and you responded to me something to the effect of, cloud, baby, that's what I'm up to. And is that kind of central to a lot of the stuff you're working on then?
Yeah, I would say that much of the activities that I'm involved in are hybrid cloud or data center transformation. But I think the real thing is that, you know, as I begin to work with more and more of these large corporations, you know, they're all looking at their infrastructure as sort of this this big cost item, right? And also, how can they be more agile? How can they get things done more efficiently, right? So you can't really bring in DevOps or anything out of that other stuff without also bringing in cloud. I think they're kind of tied to each other, right? I mean, you could sort of build your own private cloud and private data center and still do DevOps. But I really see the cloud technology being front and center of all that, even if you're doing it on-prem. So I think that 2017 was very much the year that the cloud got real in the enterprise, right? And if the enterprise is not, if you're not looking at any of these technologies now, you are way behind.
Hey, I agree with you there. And I was yesterday talking to a bunch of my colleagues in the space, the Vanguards, and we were talking about cloud technologies. And curious to your take on this, but I've always said, I say a lot of things, but I've said, you know, my observation is that I see a lot of organizations, they don't necessarily embrace the cloud because it's a cost savings or it's, you know,
no,
less expensive. I see people embracing it because it's the right platform or it's the model that they need that kind of at a higher level suits their needs and goals and stuff. Is that consistent with what you're seeing in a way?
It suits their needs and goals, or there's a specific aspect of the cloud technology they can leverage very quickly to solve a specific business problem. So, for example, BCDR, I think, is the killer app for cloud, right? Because there's so many small, medium-sized businesses that don't have multiple data centers, right? Or the cost of maintaining a secondary data center is that you barely touch, right? I mean, if it's only there for when the bad thing happens, right? Whereas, you know, if you use something like Azure Site Recovery, right, you can leverage the cloud to be your fallback data center if the bad thing happens, right? And you can hydrate those virtual machines at the time of the continuity event. You don't have to run live VMs constantly 24/7 and chew up all that compute bill, right? You can flip that thing on the second that you need it, and it's essentially you're just doing storage replication, which we know cloud storage is so cheap, right? I mean, what is what is like a 1 terabyte, you know, I mean, even for consumer side, like, right? What is 1 terabyte of OneDrive cost, or Google Drive, or any of those things? Like, oh, I mean,
yeah, that's almost free, basically.
Yeah, I mean, and when people tell me I don't trust a cloud, I don't use cloud for backup storage on a personal level, I'm like, well, why not?
Right, right. Yeah, I agree with you there. In fact, I've been working a lot with putting the DR aspect up with the cloud model in place too. I mean, we've done it a lot with service providers for a long time, but then also we just launched, soft launched a product called Veeam Recovery to Microsoft Azure. So
very nice.
Yeah. So very if nice. Organizations want to take like their backups, their Veeam backups, and throw them up into Azure, the twist there is that you can also keep the networking simple so that you can simply extend your on-prem network to Azure as well. So
that's what I love about software-defined networking and virtual networking that we see in Azure and in other offerings, is that, you know, you don't have to redesign your freaking network to accommodate the cloud. It's a strap-on.
Yep.
Literally.
Yep. And the, I think the cloud and then DR, in fact, this year, 2017, we had an incredible year with like the hurricanes and the natural disasters.
Yeah.
You know,
For those of us that live in Florida and fully recognize, you know, what happens when a big storm comes through.
Yeah.
You know, that was an awakening for a lot of us, because I had not sat through a big storm before.
How'd you guys do through it? I mean, it was, you did better than Puerto Rico.
The east coast of Florida, I think, got off pretty easily, right? I mean, it still disrupted things, but we didn't take the full brunt of the storm. The west coast of Florida really got the worst of it. Mm-hmm. But I think because of the way that houses are built here with concrete block construction, the fact that a lot of our power infrastructure is below ground, and the way that things were built since the early 1990s, everything was completely rebuilt since the last major hurricane, that we got off pretty easily. I mean, my house didn't incur any damage. I mean, I lost power for a couple of days, but that was the worst of it.
Yeah, and that's what I've heard consistently, that new building code does make all the difference. And I guess it was really triggered by, like, Hurricane Andrew in the 90s, right?
That's correct.
Then, you know, but then outside of North America, you know, there's tragic, you know, typhoons in Southeast Asia often, and in the Indian Ocean and things like that all the time. And, you know, I just think organizations around the world, we've got an opportunity to take this DR thing and make it right, make it better. And really just it, I hate to pull the buzzword bingo out, but, you know, this is an opportunity for digital transformation to stick. And what I mean by that is that if an organization can't run without their IT services, which we all know basically we can't, therefore we need to have this DR thing sorted out, right? And I'll go one step further. You know, Perla, when you grew up doing IT, did you have this rule that, you know, your DR site needed to be 10 miles away or something like that at least? Did you ever have that rule?
Well, you know, not so much. But, you know, I think so when I was at IBM, right, you know, I frequently worked for their business continuity and resiliency services division. And, you know, we would do these giant ass DR tests where, like, you know, we would actually we would stand up a facility with an exact clone copy or as cloned as possible. Their infrastructure, or a mini version of the exact same type of servers and all that stuff. And you know, we dragged out the tapes and all those things, and we went through restore scripts and everything. And it was a huge manual process. Like, you're pulling out run books and all kinds of things, and you're going through checklists and everything. It was like, you might as well try to launch a Saturn V than try to bring your business back from a disaster, you know, in the 80s and 90s, right? And even the 2000s. But I think what I think I love about the cloud is, and you look at things like, you know, Azure and AWS, is you can do full tests, full failovers, to the point where you've almost cut over, mm-hmm. and you can validate that system is up and running without having to do a full cutover. You're like, okay, I'm ready to do the cutover. I see the machines are alive. My data is replicated. I've got consistency across my databases and transactions. Ready to go. Do we flip the button? No, we don't need to flip the button. But you can do that a couple times a year.
Right. And then automate it if you want, and that's something we're working on. But, yeah, that's exactly where we need to be today, because that complexity that you described that you had to deal with back in the day, there's just no space and place for that anymore. And then on top of that, there's so much more stuff, honestly, that it's almost unmanageable to think of those types of plans. I mean, here's the other thing. You might get it to work once, and you do that once a year, but then – you know, Jason, everything changes. You know, tomorrow new things show up, workloads go away, new apps change. It's all invalidated, right? So we need to take this all really seriously. That's something Veeam's working on. I know that the cloud players are working on that. And, you know, if an organization hasn't gone through an event, chances are they may have to. So there's no better time than now to start sorting out DR.
Agreed.
I challenge that 10 mile rule is really obsolete, in that really the only practical way to do it today is honestly with the cloud. Just simply put, nobody really needs to get
quite frankly, who has the money to invest in all this data center infrastructure other than the Amazons, the Microsofts, and the Googles and the IBMs of the world, right? And whatever other hyperscalers you want to bring into the equation, they have the money to spend on data centers. They know how to build data centers more efficiently and better than any other enterprise out there, right? So the fact that, you know, you can go to an Azure and they've got I don't know how many freaking regions they got now, right?
But can't keep up. It's a target.
I mean, it's so easy to design a fault tolerant infrastructure where you've got, you know, in your geographical region, you've got X number of data centers you can immediately fail back to, and then you've got that you're replicating the stuff in a completely different geo, right? Simultaneously, if you want to, right? I mean, you can obviously, there's a cost associated with storage duplication and whether or not you leave VMs running hot or not, right? But you know, these are decisions that you have the flexibility of making, depending on the size of your enterprise and the prioritization of how important certain applications are and when you want them back, right? So you know, we just didn't have these tools 20 years ago, so we had to do it a certain way, the old-fashioned way. Now we don't have to do it the old-fashioned way. We have much better tools. We have much more responsive infrastructure. There's no reason why we shouldn't move towards that model.
I agree with you 100%. That's one of the things I evangelize and my team evangelizes basically every day, is that there's really no excuse not to have this. And, you know, I can't help you after it's happened, basically, is what it comes down to. How about into 2018? You know, what do you see as, you know, changing focus, new, different, something that's going away?
So, any predictions there? I don't think anything is quote unquote going away, right? Because we have a lot of legacy technology we still need to support, right? You know, we talk about VMs and IaaS. That's all going to be very important to us for, I think, at least in the next 20 years for sure, right?
Sure.
Because, you know, in-house applications don't get transformed so fast. There's a certain amount of, I wouldn't call it abandonware, but people not wanting to upgrade to new versions of stuff and completely re-architect things just because they need to, right? And there's plenty of stuff that works just fine. If you go beyond the operating systems infrastructure that needs to be patched and all that, right? Look, yeah, you got to get rid of your SQL 2005. You got to get rid of the SQL 2003. You know, get rid of the old versions of Unix and Linux. Okay, you know, fine, right? But no one says that you have to go to service oriented, you know, architecture. Tomorrow, if your three-tier client server application is working, right? Yeah, you got to upgrade your OS infrastructure. Yeah, totally. Get rid of the old garbage and move it forward. Kick the ball forward if you need to, but we do need to take a look at these things, these container things, right? Because I think that is going to be what really causes the cloud to explode. I think honestly the containers are the killer app, because those are not things that I think that we really want to try to build out on-prem, in my opinion, right? Because there's so many finished services that we can take advantage of, repositories and things, that will allow us to far more cheaply build out containers in the public cloud than on-prem. right?
I agree with you. It's almost, it's kind of like smoking. It's not really a good time to start. And it comes to building something new like containers, this isn't really the right place to do it. Meaning the cloud is the right place to do something like that. Or a different model would be, you don't want to mix these realms of traditional apps and stuff. I don't think you're almost walking into a whole set of new problems later on if you mix these totally different things.
Yeah, and I look at enterprises that are also taking a look at their traditional, you know, networking infrastructure and thinking about moving to SDN in different forms, whether it's ACI or if it's VMware NSX and all those things. That's a difficult transition as well. Right. And then we look at, do we want a greenfield to a new data center, or do we just want to do all this in the cloud? Right. And these are very valid things to think about. I think there are enterprises that should never think about doing things hybrid. They should go into this. They should go into cloud full force. But then you have organizations that still have things like, they've got mini computers, right? They still got they have Unix infrastructure and things that cannot be easily transformed over to cloud. So you're going to have a hybrid, right? And you're going to need software-defined networking, and they have other problems just besides just the regular transform that they're facing of their old infrastructure. They're looking at things like divesting company infrastructure, so they spinning things off, absorbing other companies. This is sort of the ebb and flow of enterprise networks and infrastructure, right? And people come and people go, but you want to have a stability, right? And I think what cloud brings us is a new form of stability, right? Because it can be the more platform agnostic you become. You look at technologies like containers, right? That can be moved from provider to provider if necessary, right? It doesn't necessarily tie you down to an Azure or ties you down to an AWS or a Rackspace or Google. By moving to this methodology or to this sort of way of doing things, right? You can ensure that you have an infrastructure that is essentially future-proof for the most part, right? I think that we're starting to realize that some of the stuff that we did, 10, 15 years ago is not future-proof at all. We need to re-architect it just because it doesn't adapt well to the modern way of doing things.
Well, I agree with you there. And one example I'll highlight is pretty specific is I see a lot of organizations that are take virtualization, which is, like you said, going to be around for 20 years. I get you, agree with you there. But it's one of those things that I see a lot of organizations who haven't changed materially how they are virtualizing.
No.
None of the new storage stuff, none of the automation. And it's like, okay, you're halfway there, but there's a lot more you can do with it. Take the 2016 or 2006 called and they want their virtual admin back, right?
I know people that are still doing patch management manually.
Oh gosh, wow.
Yeah, and I'm seeing a lot of hard boundary VLANs. I'm seeing just like a lot of firewall stuff pushed to different switches independently rather than holistically. So I think that what we're really seeing is sort of a move towards management platforms, mm-hmm. because the management platforms help us scale out, right? Allow us to have fewer people controlling larger domains of stuff, right? Which is really, I think, what we're getting to.
My guilty admin, behavior, I'll admit, I'm not a perfect administrator, but I actually don't do really good templating,
No, I suck at that.
So, I have templates, but they're like, I still have a little bit of touch to use, just because everything I do is so different. I don't do a lot of uniformity, and my use case is the lab. So it's everyone's use case, I think, also dictates how they use it. But the lab of what we do, there's a huge amount of heterogeneity. So it almost lends itself into, I have one template. Do I make 38 templates and use them each once a year? That doesn't make any sense either.
And this is why processes are now becoming so much more important. I used to not think about ITIL, ITSA, ITSM, all that stuff, right?
Yeah, and I used configuration to run away.
Management.
Yeah.
I'm like, ah, it scares crap out of me. This is not my thing. You know, exactly. I'm not organized enough. You know, I'm not a project manager. I'm not a methodology person. You know, I'm an infrastructure, you know, architect dude. Mm-hmm. I don't do this stuff. But now what I'm finding is that this has become so much more important, right? And it's part and parcel with moving to cloud and DevOps, right? It's the whole continuous delivery aspect of things. I mean, just take a look at, like, the way Microsoft now has to deliver its operating systems, right? It's no longer, we're going to release this new thing in 4 years, and then we're going to have a patch cycle for the next couple of years, and then we release the next couple of thing, and then we, you know. Now it's like Windows 10 is a new thing every freaking couple of weeks.
Right. What do you think about that, though? I mean, that's kind of hard to keep up with, but I don't know if that actually matters in the end either.
I haven't seen really honestly how it's affected the server side yet, but I mean, clearly if you start to embrace things like 2016 and you start looking at stuff like Azure Stack, that has to be in sync all times.
Right.
And so now we have to be much more religious about patch management and updates and things, because we know that we're constantly under attack. So we have to continually secure those environments, and we have to be vigilant.
Oh, yeah, the security bit I think is going to really take off next year as well. I know that I've been given some thought about, you know, little things like, well, first of all, just, you know, ransomware, which is somewhat overdone, but it's still a problem, especially if, you know, because people run into it every day.
But forget the enterprise for a second, right? Think about guys like you and me, right? I got, what, I don't know, like 100-something IP devices in my house, probably more, right? Between all the freaking IoTs and the laptops and the iPads and the iPhones and the Androids and all this other garbage, right? And the entertainment decks and, you know, the Nests and all these things. Now, you know, I need to have a UTM installed as my firewall, because I have no freaking idea what these things are doing, right? And who's and what the heck is and how many cloud services and things I'm talking about. I mean, if I just go into my Sophos NG and I see how many sessions are going out and how many things it's talking to, you know, it makes me freaking nervous.
So I had that exact same thing happen, Perlo, believe it or not. So I, my home arrangement, much like yours, is like a little bit overdone by the common
standard. And there are people that are way worse. I look at guys like Patrick Moorhead, like, holy crap. Like,
that's true.
You know, like, you know.
I'm actually pretty simple, but I was looking in my content filter. I have an I'm saying pretty simple, but here we go. I run the Untangle as a content filter for all of the networking in the house. And I was looking at it, and it just keeps blinking this light on Taiwan. Like, what the heck is going on in Taiwan? And I'm like, I'm checking all the computers. I mean, there's always this persistent traffic to Taiwan. I thought I was getting hacked. Right. Turns out the webcam I have, it goes up there to
cloud service. The word
cloud service, stuff. Exactly. So I thought I was under attack, right? But again, I don't know what's going on. But no, it was legit. Anyways, but that's another thing. You know, you go the IoT route, and I actually just wrote an article about that, because I actually think IoT at face value is impossible to get your head around unless...
It's really hard to get around.
You just have to start with the result. You have to think of a use case that makes perfect sense for you in one's organization. And that's the one thing is my caution here, is there's incredible fragmentation of the use case.
Oh, my God. Even in my house, how many freaking different smart switches and things do I have? I got two different manufacturers of thermostats. And how are these Echo freaking, you know, listening device / you know...
Echo
Bluetooth
Alexa's
things do I got?
Too many, yeah. Brother.
And they all got different apps for the most part. You know, it's getting a little bit better, but it's still kind of, you know.
And you'll never see it go like full-blown standards-based, right?
No.
They're just, honestly, I don't know. I'd have to work backwards to the simplicity of some of these manufacturing, right? They're simple devices. They're very, the light bulbs, you know, for example. I actually just got a gift. My new boss got me a TP-Link little smart switch An outlet, I should say. You plug it into an outlet, and it becomes a managed switched outlet. I had a really good idea for it too. This actually saved me an incredible manual step at home, and this is actually a practical tip for those of you at home. So I have this little powered switch that is on a timer for a small amount of time per week to be powered on and then powered off, about 2 hours, and that lines up exactly with one of my special backup jobs. So that particular...
Oh, very... Yeah. 'Cause you only boot the servers for a certain amount of time that it needs to do the backup, and then you continue to turn the thing off.
The hard drive itself, yeah. Ah, so I've got a I/O safe, fireproof hard drive that I power on just for the backup window, and I took the last year of the backup windows. And this is a separate job. I have a job that runs... Actually, I have three jobs that run to two different storage, and then this is basically my quote-unquote off-site, but because I'm not actually going off-site, it's a different media, but it's in one of those fireproof, ruggedized containers that can be flooded and burned and stuff, so it's pretty safe. But anyways, that's only on for 2 hours a week, and I have a separate backup job that just goes there, and it only has the power on during that backup window. So, you know, that was a really good use case for that IoT device. It runs, it's actually going to run tonight. I'm going to test it. I might stay up for the
power. I have something that runs on a timer. I have my espresso machine is on a Wemo switch that is off on between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. at night.
7 a.m. Wow. The plight of those with no children. Okay, this brother's up way earlier than that.
Man. You're having your espresso earlier than that? I see what your freaking flight paths look like half the time. It's like, oh man, you're like over. You're like, I don't even know what time zone you think you're on half the time.
I'm good now. This month I am only having two trips or one trip for two nights, and that was Chicago, so that was nothing. So December was very easy, but this year, was the worst travel for me ever.
Are you like triple platinum on like every freaking airline?
Well, right, on Delta, I'm diamond and a half.
Wow.
Okay, and then that's the SkyTeam persuasion, and then I've got a little tuckaway points on. I haven't hit status, but I hit all the other airlines too. So the two other alliances in North America, and then even some Southwest, and I even flew for the first time Air Serbia this year twice, and that didn't align to any point program. They have an arrangement with Qatar or Etihad Airways, but I didn't sign up for that. But yeah, this was a very motion full year. In fact, I on purpose do not use TripIt because I don't want to summarize how much it is. It's cray. It's absolutely cray. But you know, this next year it'll be a little. I always say this. It'll be different for me. How about for you? You know, you're traveling a lot. Probably a lot less than you were.
Way, way less. And you know, the company I work for is very big on digital presence and telecommuting. You know, we're about 1,500 people in the United States. You know, we are a larger company globally because you know we're a subsidiary of NTT Data, and we have you know, our corporate headquarters, our group headquarters is in South Africa. I work in a very dispersed team of professionals that are all over the United States. So we use Cisco's you know, Spark platform for video communications and collaboration, which has been great. You know, I mean, I came out of the Microsoft environment with Skype for Business and all that. That's a great platform. And now I don't know how I could function without these tools.
Well, I snicker a bit because Perlo and I had a little fun trying to get the Skype for Business recording to work, which we couldn't. We had to switch over to regular Skype, which let's hope this works. But, you know, I get you that the telepresence, that's the way to go. It's the only way to scale. You know, the amount of time that is lost, you know, when you travel. I mean, you have to be – well, there's a separate thing. You have to be productive on the road, and I am. But not everybody – you know, can just withstand being gone. I don't even want to know how many hours I spent on a plane during a workday, much less even worse during the weekend, right? So
it's just fatiguing. Yeah. It kills you. But at the same time, if you spend way too much time at home, I find myself, I need to drag myself out to the coffee place. You know, even though I have my expensive coffee machine, I still got to go out to the coffee place. I still have to go out to lunch. I still have to go do an errand or something just to be in front of people.
Yep.
Because
yep.
The isolation drives you crazy.
Funny story, 2011, when we moved offices at Veeam, we went it was a real dump, the place we were at until then. But we went to the nice place where we're at now. And we just had run out of space in between. So I think it was the end of 2010. They said, look, we are completely full. You need to work from home. So they kicked me out. And I hated it, Jason. Oh, I hated it. Well, there's two things. One, I didn't have a proper workspace. So that really is no bueno. So that really set me off. But then the second thing, like you said, that isolation was driving me crazy. I'm an evangelist, for crying out loud. I talk to people. Now I'm talking to nobody. So I hear you, but I still go into the office. I like that. That's good for me. I mean, I could work from home. Probably should. I'd get a couple percent pay raise because I wouldn't pay the city tax. But anyways, I get that that interaction that you're talking about. That's important for me as well. Okay, yep. Man. Well, hey, let's wrap it up. I think it's going to be an interesting 2018. And
it will be a very interesting 2018. Absolutely.
Jason, as everybody will probably know, and I'll put the notes in the podcast notes, Jason writes the Tech Broiler blog on ZDNet. And you also can follow Jason on Twitter at JPerlow. And Instagram is the same as well. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's Jason Perlow on Instagram, but you'll find me on Twitter. It's all there.
Yeah, he's a foodie, he's a techie, he's all around nice guy. Thanks for being on again, Jason.
No problem, man. Happy holidays.